What got you to write the book between the relationship between channeling and ETs and UFOs?
Well, I've studied extraterrestrials and extraterrestriology, ufology. I love those two together. As long as I've studied anything else, I did my senior thesis writing project in high school in 1959 on Project Blue Book, the Air Force research. So I've been attracted, in love with that field, in awe of that field ever since, and it's just consumed everything there is on it, like many of your listeners have as well. But over time, I began to realize that as a parapsychologist also, which I am, there's only a few hundred of us in the world, actually, but we're an endangered species because mainstream science and academia, you know, doesn't look favorably upon these things, as I said earlier, and so it keeps it locked out in large part.
It doesn't mix, does it?
Right. Kind of predictably so, from the lens, you know, that analogy I used before. If you look through the lens they're looking through, they see such things as pseudoscience and quackery and superstition and things like that. The lens I look at it, I look at their science as quite limited and only a piece of the larger picture. But anyway, the as the years went by and I just lived with this material, I began to see that a lot of the things that parapsychology studies, like telepathy or extrasensory perception, or I like the term anomalous cognition, mm-hmm. a kind of knowing, knowing and information processing that we don't understand how it works according to Western science, things like that, and then which could include mediumship and telepathy and channeling, then also things like psychokinesis or unusual mind-matter relations and how mind can affect matter or intentionality can affect material systems, living or non-living, and levitation and transubstantiation and materialization, dematerialization. All of these things, you know, there's a whole constellation of these things that fall under parapsychology, including survival research, study of survival of physical death. But what I began to realize is I would read these numerous depictions and descriptions from contactees and abductees. And then as time went on, with channeled communications from purported extraterrestrials about themselves and where they come from and their technology and how they operate and how they see the larger universe, et cetera, as I looked at all this, I began to see a pattern that a certain amount of the larger extraterrestrial UFO understandings were coming to us by way of some kind of channeling or anomalous cognition. It wasn't, you know, nuts and bolts, person gets out of the ship, walks over to you, you know, gives you a set of pancakes or whatever they're going to do, and says something cryptic and then gets back on the ship or takes you on the ship and gives you an exam. I mean, that kind of physical level one is part of the picture, and so is abduction part of the picture, and the earlier conscious contactees, kind of lucid contactees, who claimed to have interactions with extraterrestrials and taken on trips and so on, seeing their home planet, but stayed conscious and it wasn't, they weren't abducted and they did it willingly and so on. And well, in all those cases, a piece of the puzzle was not just contactee information about ETs. It was also, it wasn't just abductee part of it too, the more recent, but also this third domain, channeling. Or anomalous cognition, or I'm including it to telepathy here too, and that became a bigger and bigger piece of the puzzle, that more and more of the detailed information about UFOs and extraterrestrials and the whole horse they rode in on, the whole mm-hmm. shebang, was the fine detail, the even the technical detail, was being supplied by channeled material more than the more limited stuff you would get from a contactee or an abductee. You'd have to kind of read between the lines and interpret a lot of the stuff that would come back, hypnotic induction, age regression, relivings of these things. You get glimpses of that, but you get much more direct if you're talking to somebody who claims to be an extraterrestrial telling you about, here's what it's like on my own planet, here's how I get here, here's how we exceed the speed of light, here's where we are in our civilization now compared to yours, here's why we're hanging around you now like anthropologists because we're concerned about, you know, how long you're going to last here with what you're doing to yourself and your planet and all that kind of stuff. Your listeners are well aware of.
Do they truly care about our existence?
Yes. Well, there are some that don't. I think you had a friend of mine on a while ago, Marshall Summers.
Yes.
He's part of this book. He's one of the more extended cases. And if you'll remember, your listeners will remember, he has been in contact in a channel. He does a lot of channeling of the angelic realm and the spiritual realm, too. But some of the channeling you could call telepathic, I suppose, telepathic slash channeling, because the sources, the ET sources of some of this, are physically based. Maybe they can move in and out of physical. Maybe their home mode of embodiment is transphysical, but they were describing to him that they're actually on one of the asteroids, and they're trying to hide out from some of the other ETs. But what they're telling us is, watch out, planet Earth, watch out, humankind. You are just like lambs being led to the slaughter. You're coming into the larger cosmic neighborhood, and you're like non-lucid, so to speak. You're naive as hell. You're not. You're very tribal and not very evolved yet compared to other extraterrestrials and other beings throughout the universe. You're on your way. You'll get there sooner or later. Where we now are, you one day will be. Where you now are, we once were. Kind of way of looking at it.
Are we easy marks?
Yes. We are easy marks for certain kinds of ETs. They are opportunistic. They're very much the capitalists. They're traders. They're, according to not only Marshall Summers' channelings and telepathic transmissions, but also many others that side on this. It's a whole set of literature that I've studied that says, yes, there are opportunistic beings that really are self-serving. As you know, the Zeta Reticulans or the Greys in general, the hive mentality and the kind of dispassionate, not having a, they need to go to Oz and get a heart, so to speak, you know.
But
they do have a hive mentality and they've overcome in their collective mode. Well, they, a lot of them, it seems, which is very prevalent, fills the abduction literature, as your listeners know. They're relatively self-serving. Some of them aren't. Some of them are. It's the spectrum. And so there you find some of that self-servingness or opportunistic quality. They're trying to save their own ass, so to speak, preserving their own species with the decline of the DNA and all the ways to look at this, according to them, from the channel sources, according to them, and the abductee experiences. But, yes, what happens is... according to Summers and others, we have to be prepared, because it's naive to think that all extraterrestrials that we are going, when they land on the White House lawn or whatever is going to happen, you know, we kind of have like the American Indian meets the pilgrims or.
Well, it's what Hawking just said a few days ago.
Yeah. Exactly. And that's that precinct being heard from, and we'll hear more and more from it. Like, why do we think altruistically, Pollyannishly, that they're all going to be good and have our best interests at heart. And lo and behold, in the channel literature, there's a whole realm about those from Sirius and Orion and the reptilians. There are minorities out there, ET minorities, I mean, subsets of the whole ET kingdom that have a long history of kind of screw you, we're out for ourselves, and that's just survivalist, that's Darwinian, cosmic Darwinianism, and
we must be related to that
sect. Sure, well, that's why they're drawn to us. They're drawn to us because, you know, if we were like glowing in the dark, you know, light bodies and full of love and compassion, Like the Greys are drawn to us because there's a certain commonality there, and they have something to teach us, and we have something to teach them. We each have a piece of the puzzle for the other, and that comes out a lot in that literature, by the way, as you know. Well, so if this opportunistic quality is something to be forewarned and forearmed about,